Blog Talk Radio.
Take a licking. There is someone waiting who will hurry up and rescue you. Just call for Super Chicken.
Welcome to the Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer Radio Show, where we give away more chicken coops and chicken-related prizes than anyone else on the planet. We are often imitated, but never duplicated. My name is Andy Schneider, but most know me as the Chicken Whisperer, author of The Chicken Whisperer's Guide to Keeping Chickens. My co-host is Pat Foreman, author of City Chicks, Chicken Tractor, and other great titles. Today is Wednesday, September 5th, and I would like to thank all of you for tuning in this afternoon on Blog Talk Radio. This is a live radio show that is broadcast around the world. This radio show is all about keeping backyard poultry, show poultry, and living a self-sufficient lifestyle. Each week, we welcome experts in their field to share their knowledge about different topics, including backyard poultry, show poultry, heritage poultry, gardening, cooking, and, of course, living that self-sufficient lifestyle that we often try to do. Be sure to visit our website, chickenwhisperer.com, where you can follow us on Twitter and become a fan on Facebook. Once again, I would like to thank all of you for tuning in to Backyard Poultry with The Chicken Whisperer.
Mount Healthy Hatcheries has been a hatching tradition for over 80 years. Home of the healthiest chicks, Mount Healthy Hatcheries offers a wide selection of bantams, turkeys, guineas, ducks, pheasants, and of course, meat birds and layers. Order online at mounthealthy.com. That's mthealthy.com. Or give them a call at 1-800-451-5603. Don't forget to ask about their free bonus chicks offer. Mount Healthy Hatcheries, home of the healthiest chicks.
Established in 1957, GQF has become the name to trust when it comes to quality products and superior customer service. GQF offers a wide range of poultry products, including incubators, brooders, feeders, waters, and much, much more. Give them a call at 912-236-0651 or visit them online at gqfradio.com. That's gqfradio.com.
Snap Lock Chicken Coops, the American-made, maintenance-free, plastic hen house. With its double-wall construction and adjustable ventilation, it's the perfect year-round home for your small flock. It will not fade or rot and is unaffected by rain, sun, heat, cold, or chemicals. The removable litter and nesting trays make cleaning a breeze. Every access point is lockable for maximum predator resistance. Snap-lock chicken coops weigh just 40 pounds and snap together in minutes. So spend more time enjoying your flock and less time building and maintaining your coop. For additional information, please visit snaplockchickencoops.com. Also available at mypetchicken.com, critter-cages.com, and chickensforbackyards.com.
Hoffman, and you're listening to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer.
And the mighty bird against prejudice continues.
All righty, thank you very much for staying with us today. I appreciate it here on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. Sorry about a few technical problems. I'm having some sound issues on my end. Let me get a sound check in the chat room. Woohoo! Sound check in the chat room. We're on about a 20-second delay, so in a couple of minutes I'll get some info in the chat room. So anyway, thank you very much for joining us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. And, okay, good. Recorded messages seem to be slipping a little bit. Yes, that was the problem I was getting. So, but other than that, and my sounds okay. But the, how about now? Okay, I see. Gotcha. Okay, very good. As long as I'm clear, want to make sure that that works well. And the sound check is going well. Very good. But thanks for tuning in today. It is the first Wednesday of the month. That means it's September the 5th. And we've got a great show lined up for you today. It's Garden Wise Living with Arlena. Garden Wise Living with Arlena today. And we've got a great topic as well that she's going to be coming to the show here shortly and teaching us all about year-round gardening. In fact, today's topics are going to be dehydrating tomatoes and green beans and making green tomato apple pie. Not sure what's all that about, so we'll have to see. I'll have to learn about that as well. Love a good apple pie, but I'm not sure I know I've never had a green tomato apple pie. I'm pretty sure I've received that information right. And she's going to be answering some questions she's received via email from our listeners here on the show. So great show lined up for today, Year-Round Gardening with Arlena. Garden-Wise Living. Looking forward to today's show. Thank you very much for joining us over there in the chat room. Let me get over here and say hello to all of you. All righty. And let's see. We got Chaz Squirrels joining us today. Thank you very much. We got Dragonflyer, East Dallas Dave, E. Shriver, a couple of guests in there. Guest, if you'll take a moment to register, you too can get your own unique, fun, and creative screen name. Then come on in and join us and make some new friends. We've got Hooch. We've got let's see, Linda, we've got Moto Clown, New Dawn Farm Girl, we've got Pamela, we've got Poet's Wife up there out in Nashville, we've got Ralph, and of course, Sweet Potato. All righty, got to love to correspond with Sweet Potato on Facebook. She's one of my Facebook friends, and love posting things on her wall. It can be quite entertaining sometimes, so in fact, I know Sweet Potato, I believe it was yesterday, went down to the local market and got tons and tons of corn and all kinds of produce, and she's working very hard, I'm sure even today, shucking that corn and canning it and really the whole nine yards. So I know she's a busy, busy little beaver canning some good stuff. Speaking of year-round gardening, man, ours is pretty much in full swing. We got a beautiful, beautiful rain. I guess it was the day before yesterday, the evening. And so I took advantage of that moisture and went out and harrowed the garden again yesterday. I believe it's going to need it about two more times. Really, a half of it's about ready to roll. And half of it's going to need it at least two times. So might as well just go ahead and I harrow the whole thing a couple of times. Because remember, we were gone for about 24 days in July. Or maybe that was August. Anyway, and so the grass got a little out of hand. Normally, when I got the garden going, I'm out there and tilling a little bit each day to maintain that, keep my rows all nice and clean of weeds and whatnot. You've seen the pictures. But when you're gone 3 weeks, you can't do that. So grass took over from our summer garden. It was pretty much done producing when we had left. And probably could have got maybe one more crop out of it, of peas and some other things. But the grass got a little out of hand, so, pardon me, we had to bush hog that a couple of times, a couple of rounds of bush hogging. And then I said, you know what, I'm going to kind of harrow that into the soil, get some good compost going and start building that up. So about half the garden, I've kind of churned that down in the soil real good, and half the garden it's still kind of laying on the top. So I may get the cultivator out and go over it and see if I can't drag some of that hay down to the end and get it out of the way. But still, we'll harrow it a couple of more times. Maybe this afternoon I'll take Caleb down to the farm store, and we're going to get some fertilizer. I need to get some of that down actually, and then may go ahead and start buying some seeds and maybe some plants. So may hold off on that till Saturday, and then Jen can go with us.
But the big deal is that I'm definitely going to be planting the garden, weather permitting, this coming Monday and Tuesday. The Farmer's Almanac, try to plant by that as best we can. But this Monday and Tuesday, I believe it's the 10th and 11th, shows in the Farmer's Almanac that's the best day to plant. So that's what we're rolling for today. So harrowing a couple more times, and then I hook up the spreader to the tractor, and I get out some fertilizer, come back in with the cultivator, mark off my rows. Once they're marked off with the cultivator, I know my rows are going. Then I'm going to get that new, remember the power plow, the power wheel that I got off Craigslist for $40? It's about a $500 machine, about a $100 tune-up, carburetor rebuild. You know, hey, $40 off of Craigslist, the thing is great. Power plow, I'm going to use that and go right down my rows that I marked with the cultivator, plowing out and then planting, planting it. Some of the stuff we're going to be doing plants. So we're going to have, what are we going to have plant-wise? The cauliflower and the broccoli and the cabbage and the lettuce will all be flats of plants. And then everything that will be seed is going to be the turnips and the carrots and the beets. And what else? Turnip greens, collard greens, the beets. The peas, English peas will be seed, of course, and a couple of other things. So definitely looking forward to getting this in the ground next Monday and Tuesday, which will end up being about 20 days earlier than our last year garden. Of course, we had just moved down here. Caleb was just a little tyke and all that kind of stuff, but we were getting ready. So we got the garden in about a month late, and I think we're right on schedule. I think the 1st through the 15th really is optimum for this area for a fall garden, and I'm definitely looking forward to it. Also, you remember last year with our fall garden, we donated 2 truckloads of food to the community. We bagged it all up, and we hit the roads in the truck going door to door. We hit the elderly first, the shut-ins, I guess you call it. Got them fixed income first. Then we got kids, single moms, single parents with kids. We got regular families with kids, and then we just basically hit everybody else with all this free produce this past fall garden. So we love doing that and helping the community. We also, if you remember, we had those 100 broilers that we donated back to the community. So that was a good thing that made us feel good, made the community feel good, and those were that was good times. We didn't have really any time and to the extra produce from the spring garden to donate. We sold a little bit, and most of it went into our freezers because it was our first spring garden. So we had nothing in the freezer. Now we do, the okra and the squash and the peas and the beans and the corn and the things like that. So we feel that with this fall garden, we'll be able to have plenty enough more to donate back to the community, pardon me, as well, like we always try to do. It's what it's all about, you know? So how many out there in the chat room are going to have a fall garden? I know we have listeners all over the country or different places. Some people in Florida already have their fall garden, but I know Arlene is up in Wisconsin. She's probably not even thinking about fall garden yet, or maybe it's starting to get cooler there. Maybe she's already got it in. But the issue there is, how about in the chat room? Tell me, show me there, who's all planning in a fall garden? And if Pamela's got a fall garden going. E. Shriver's never tried a fall garden. Let me tell you, I hadn't either. I had smaller scale, but last year was our big, big fall garden, and very, very successful. I was very pleased. And it's nice outside. You can get out and till. You can work in the garden. A lot of the bugs disappear and the gnats, and it's just great fun gardening. You can out there till without sweating your tail off. And a fall garden, really, really fun. Dragonflyer says probably just carrots and some radishes. She has to do the fall garden in the tubs. And we'll be laying seed and flats this week in Arizona. Still 105 to 110. Woo! That's pretty hot out there in Arizona. Thinking about a fall garden when it's 105. My goodness. And, they're saying, hey, E. Shriver, try it, and I'm sure you'll probably like it and get some late-season yummies as well. So perfect, perfect, perfect there. And a lot of people putting in a fall garden. I really like to do the fall garden. In fact, we can do about year-round gardening here in South Georgia. In fact, a lot of people I've been riding around, they have done 2 seasons of corn. They planted corn back in March. They've harvested that, and they immediately planted more corn, and they'll be harvesting that probably in October. You can get two crops of, a lot of times, your early spring, summer crop, you can get two of those here. But I got to get my fall garden in, and I'm looking forward to that this week. I'll be a busy beaver here on the homestead the next few days through Tuesday, trying to get that sucker in. And I've got I pulled up all of the solar night eyes units that surround the garden to keep the deer out. Those will be going back in probably the end of next week, all around the garden. I may give it a couple of weeks rest and then get that up and get those back installed, because they work great to keep the deer out of the garden. Well, I've used it two seasons, almost a year now, and it's fabulous stuff. And I got to get those back in. And, of course, I'll get the scarecrows back up as well, and the good old pie pans, to keep the birds and the squirrels and the deer and everything else out of the garden. So if you're putting in a fall garden, good luck to you regarding that, and I will be getting ours in here this week. Hey, don't forget, tune in tomorrow. It's we got a great show, Poultry Today with Dr. McRae. Yep, poultry scientist Dr. McRae, PhD, will be joining us tomorrow. And then this Friday is going to be an amazing fun Friday. We'll be giving away a lot of prizes, including an awesome new chicken coop from MyPetChicken.com. Yep. Hopefully you have entered. If you have not, let me tell you how to do that very, very quickly. All you got to do to enter is send me an email. The email is your entry. So send me an email to contest@chickenwhisperer.net. That's contest@chickenwhisperer.net. In the subject line of the email, put chicken coop contest. Okay. In the subject line of that email, put chicken coop contest. Then in the email itself, I need your name, your shipping address, and your phone number. Why the phone number? Because I'm going to call you live, possibly if you're the winner, this Friday during the radio show. I'm going to call the winner live this Friday on the radio show. If they answer, great. If they don't, you're still going to win. I'll just send you an email congratulating you that you won, and it's going to be random drawing through random.org. And, again, we've got that awesome chicken coop that we're going to give away this Friday from MyPetChicken.com. Looking forward to that. So make sure you enter that contest for your chance to win. The winner gets to choose one out of three coops. If you go to MyPetChicken.com, you'll see and click on their wooden chicken coops. You'll have the choice of, the salt box, the four square, and the bungalow. Those are the three coops that you'd be able to choose from if you win this chicken coop coming up. That'll be coming up this this Friday when we give that away. So how cool is that? And so very, very good. All righty, let's go over here to the phone lines. Looks like we've got Arlena Schott has in the queue waiting to come on live. And it is another great episode of Garden Wise Living with Arlena. Got some great topics today. And we are going to see exactly, I'm sure she'll tell us, what wine she is indulging in today. So let's give it up for Arlena and Garden Wise Living. Hey, Arlena, how you doing today?
I'm good, thank you. And how are you?
I'm doing well. Just
sounds like
doing
it.
Well. Going to be busy, and I had a cold this last week, and so it was quite the pain getting all of that out of the system. But we made it through. Didn't even miss any shows because of it, and didn't still got work done around the house. So,
yay! That's good. Yes. I did actually myself pick up a little bit of something from Chicago when I was down there and wandering around the hospital during my husband's operation. I'm sure that didn't help much. So anyway, I do myself have a little bit of a sinus thing going on. But you know what? A good glass of wine always makes things better, in my opinion, right?
There you go.
So we're going to go ahead and start off the show. Absolutely. Hello, everybody, and I hope you can either have a glass of wine with me, or if it's too early, let's have a cup of coffee, or let's, you know, things like that. But anyway, let's get started. My first one, let's see. I'm going to pour it out here. And I have some really exciting news about wine. Wollersheim Winery, that is here in Prairie du Sac, Wisconsin. Say that five times fast.
No kidding.
Yes, it won, actually, at the San Diego International Wine Competition, won the 2012 Winery of the Year. That's the Wollersheim Winery, right here in Prairie du Sac, Wisconsin. So that we're very, very proud of them, so we have to give them a round of applause. And this, so in honor of them, in honor of them, I'm actually drinking one of their wines. It's the Prairie Sunburst Red, and it's one of their fall sips, they call it, for the month. So this is a really good. Here, I'm going to take a sip. I already had a couple sips just so I could explain it to you, but it's an unoaked wine, and it's fruity red. It's a very, very berry flavors, like raspberry. So in my opinion, it's perfect for fall. It does have a really good raspberry flavor, and I'm really keen on raspberry-flavored wines. So I don't know about y'all, but I like fruity wines. So this is really nice. Again, it's a Prairie Sunburst Red. So glasses off to you.
Pardon
is
me,
our sound cutting getting out, or is it me or you?
No, it just depends. I was calling and was telling Bill to refresh the page, and we can get another sound check in the chat room. How are we sounding? We just heard about the wine that Arlena is indulging in today, and you, of course, hear me yapping. So let me get another sound check in the chat room and see if it may just be an issue with Bill's player on his computer.
Are we okay?
I think so.
Cutting out? Because I wouldn't want you to miss out on any of this Prairie du Sac. Say that 10 times. Goodness gracious, what a name. Anyway, Wisconsin Wine, because they have done a wonderful job, and I'm really proud of them, especially competing with all those wonderful California wineries. They've actually did the 2012 Winery of the Year. So I'm glad it's sounding okay in the chat room, because we've got lots to cover today.
Great. Perfect. I think we're sounding good. Yep.
I can hear y'all.
All righty.
Yes.
Very good.
Anyway, I did hear all your wonderful chatter about fall gardening. And, yes, we are in the process of putting in some fall crops here as well, even though we've had some really warm weather. I mean, unusually warm for Wisconsin in the 80s, high 80s, you know, 90s. That's pretty warm for us this time of year. Usually we've cooled right down to the 70s. But we've had some unusually warm weather. We did get some nice rain, so that's good as well. But we are now coming back to the 70s, I see, this whole next week. So my daughter, they just put in a hoop house, and they're putting in some fall, they put in some radishes and some Swiss chard and some spinach, and they did transplant some big tomatoes from the garden into that hoop house so that they're just trying it out. They just put it up, and they just got it. So actually this fall is just their, you know, kind of play with it a little bit and then just get everything put in early spring to be able to year-round garden in Wisconsin, which is wonderful. I don't necessarily know how year-round it's going to be, but at least it'll be farther. And it's a season extender is what it is, a hoop house is. So that's really great here for us. But for y'all that can year-round garden, yes, that's awesome. Fall crops are starting to go in, I agree. Okay, now, what we're going to talk about today, we've got a few things I thought I'd just cut it all up and make it, instead of one big monster topic, let's talk about a whole bunch of stuff, like we never do. Anyway, we're going to talk about dehydrating green beans and tomatoes. I know Annie Haven from had told me, because I sent a picture out of all my green beans. They're amazing. It's just loaded. I'm green beaned out. Froze them, done everything we can do to them. So now she says, Arlena, dehydrate green beans. And then she gave, you know, we're going to try to put a spice rub on them, maybe a little bit of spicy seasoning so that they dehydrate and then they have a spicy flavor. So I'll let you all know how that turns out. But dehydrating tomatoes, that's like, I think we've talked about it last season, but geez, it's time. On my back porch, there are 3 5-gallon buckets of tomatoes. We've sauced them, we've smashed them, we've canned them, we've frozen them. We've done everything we can with them. Now we still have 3 5-gallon buckets sitting out there, plus more in the garden. Okay, what do we do? I'm going to dehydrate them. One of my absolute favorite things in the entire universe is to dehydrate tomatoes. And why? Because it tastes so good and it's so easy. Now, I'm all about easy. You know me, Rebel Gardener. I am all about easy. So I love just to do things easily. And this is the easiest you can get. You take your tomato. If, in fact, you need to wash them, that's fine. Go right ahead. I don't worry about too much about that. Okay. So we've washed them off. Now we're going to slice them in the thin slices, and we're going to put them on our dehydrator trays, pop them into our dehydrator, turn it on the vegetable setting. This is a no-brainer issue, which I love it. And then walk away. I love it. And the smell of the house turns to fall, and you can smell those beautiful tomatoes. And then you check them periodically so they make sure they're really completely dry. I like to just turn it on, walk away, and let it go through the night. In the morning, check and make sure they're completely dry. Crunchy dry, that's a technical term. Crunchy dry is a technical term. It is. And so then I take them off of their screens, and I throw them into Ziploc bags, and into the freezer they go. And why do I put them in the freezer? We've talked about this before. If we do not in Wisconsin because of the humidity, and I'm sure there in Georgia where you're at is probably the same issue, correct? If you do not put them into either a sealed container or into Ziploc bags and throw them into the freezer, they will rehydrate. And then
with all the humidity, you've got that right.
With all the humidity, they'll just puff right up and mold. They'll be done for. So if what I like to do is be able to take a few out and put a few, you know, and not have to worry about my container. So if it's for instance, if you have a vacuum packer and you vacuum pack a bag of dried tomatoes, that will work perfectly fine until you decide I only need a few for a salad or for a stew. Then you have an issue. How do I reseal that? So we have to re-vacuum pack them. Instead, if you throw them in a Ziploc bag and throw them into the freezer, you can take that big Ziploc bag full of your deliciously hydrated tomatoes out, pluck out a handful, zip it back up, and throw it back in the freezer. And then everything stays also nice and crunchy. But one of my favorite things in the entire universe to use my dehydrated wonderfulness tomatoes on is salad. Yes, a green salad. You just take a handful out and you crunch them on top of your green salad, and it's just delicious, and it's so good. Or even when the kids are yelling and screaming for a snack, or grandkids, you just open a Ziploc bag and hand them a handful of dehydrated tomato chips, and it's so good for you. There is our dehydrated tomato. Sun-dried tomatoes? Yes, I like sun-dried tomatoes too. Do we have any questions in there?
There was one in there. Let me see. Can you store dehydrated tomatoes in olive oil?
You can for only a certain length of time. They're actually not going to stay dehydrated in olive oil. They will plump up, which is just exactly what you buy in the store when you buy sun-dried tomatoes. I'm sorry. I guarantee it. Most of those are our dehydrated tomato thrown into olive oil, and then they're sold to us. So, yes, you can for a certain length of time, but a long time. Let's say yes. Just going to say yes to that. Yes, you can. Yes. My dehydrator is coming out today, Motocon. Awesome. I love it. The New Dawn Farm Girl, she has three. Go, girl. She's a rock in the farm world. Yeah,
we were talking there in the chat room about dehydrating cabbage. Now, we're planting cabbage, and I'm not a huge fan of cabbage. I don't like boiled cabbage. I may try it again this year, but normally I'm not a fan of it. I remember Mom making it and just wasn't a fan. But, of course, I like a good coleslaw, not a mayonnaise-covered coleslaw, but you know, a good coleslaw with maybe some red cabbage in there and some coleslaw. And anyway, so when I do cabbage, I'll probably do grate it up for a good coleslaw, or maybe put it in soup or something like that. But she's talking about dehydrating cabbage. Never heard of such.
Yum. Absolutely perfect. And the reason for it is anything dehydrated stores longer, obviously.
Yeah.
And then if you freeze it, especially if you put it in a Ziploc bag and freeze it, you can, if you're making a soup or a stew or soup, oh my gosh, pluck it out, throw it into your soup, it rehydrates and all that wonderfulness, broth and flavor, and then it's perfect. It tastes just as good as fresh. It's just another way for us to keep that harvest, that bounty that the garden has been giving up for us for all this, all summer long. But yes, dehydrated cabbage is wonderful. Whether or not fried cabbage, there we go. Whether or not you can use it again for cabbage rolls, that is just the issue. I don't know. You know what? Let's try that. Let somebody take a leaf of cabbage, a whole leaf, you know, and lay it flat on your dehydrator and dehydrate the whole entire leaf. Then what we'll do is we'll take them and we'll lay them separately flat in a freezer bag, Ziploc bag, and throw them in the freezer. or not, just try it right away, and see if you can rehydrate those leaves of cabbage in water and see if they'll plump up enough to use them for cabbage rolls, and we'll see just how good they can be. That would be a really awesome, that's going to be our next project, you guys. I want to hear about it. Next show with Arlena Schott, I want to hear about whether or not somebody did that or if there's anybody else out there that does that. That's a really, really, really,
so
we thought of this.
Really, anything can go in a cabbage roll. I don't think I've ever had a cabbage roll. Maybe it's not a southern thing. Maybe it is. I just don't know about it. But you just basically take a big cabbage leaf and kind of roll it up like a burrito with whatever you really want to go into it. Is that right?
No, a cabbage roll. Actually, there would be a fresh cabbage roll. Correct. Nowadays, you take lettuce leaves and cabbage leaves and you load them up with all fun, good, wondrous stuff, and you eat that as your burrito instead of a instead of a tortilla, you would use a cabbage leaf or a cabbage or a lettuce leaf. But that's probably not what these people are referring to. When they say cabbage rolls, we're referring to you take the leaves off of the cabbage and you immerse them in water for a short time, boiling water, so that they get pliable.
Okay.
Then you like do a mixture of ground beef and rice and whatever you want.
Tomato sauce. I'm looking. Someone sent me an email right now. Yeah, cabbage rolls made with cabbage leaves filled with ground beef and rice and tomato sauce.
There you go, dear. And you can put absolutely anything you want in there.
A little sour cream in there and the ground beef. And
no.
Kind of make a stroganoff onions. Cabbage roll.
Yeah, they're more like a stuffed bell pepper filling. You know,
okay.
The filling for a stuffed bell pepper you would put inside your cabbage rolls. And some people, depending on your ethnicity of it all, then you would depend on what kind of sauce you have in there. You know, some people have a spicier sauce, some have more of a Italian sauce, some have more of a, you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So that's what determines what's in your cabbage rolls. And most people take them after they roll them up. You know, tuck the little sides in like a package, roll them up nicely, put them in a baking dish or in a Dutch oven, depending on how you do it, stack them in there, and then over the top goes this wondrous tomato sauce, and then you bake them or steam them, depending on how you choose to cook them. Different parts of the country cook them differently and add different ingredients. But that's what they're referring to when they're talking about cabbage rolls, I believe, anyway. So let's try and see if we... I know my daughter makes cabbage rolls, and she freezes them. So why wouldn't it work if we dehydrated them, then rehydrated them, and made cabbage rolls? Let's try it. Okay, we'll do it. Okay, beans. We're going to do beans now. Dehydrated green beans. Same thing. We've done that. We've pickled them. We've froze them. We've ate them and ate them and ate them and ate them, which they're delicious, and I can never get enough of green beans. I do my yellow beans, my purple beans, and my Kentucky Wonder blue beans, so, you know, green beans. But now we've got lots. So what do we do now? So we're going to dehydrate some, and those will be simple and easy as well. I never take the tops and bottoms off. You know that about me because I am the rebel gardener. So I throw them on my sheet, and I let them dehydrate, and that's what I'm going to do. And then Annie's going to send me a little recipe for the spice that she seasoning that she puts on them, or somebody puts on them that she knows that's kind of a hotter spice, kind of probably has a chili powder or something like that in it. I would like that sweet and sour kind of thing going on with a dehydrated green bean. So that's what we're going to do with those. We're going to dehydrate us some green beans. Okay, what's next? We're going to talk a little bit about. Are we going to do apple or are we going to do zucchini apple pie? Let's do. Green tomato. Green tomato apple pie. Now, I don't know about you, but I still. I still have green tomatoes in my garden. I don't know about y'all, but I do. So I'm still going to be able to do some of this stuff. I love fried green tomatoes. Oh, my gosh. That is one of my favoriteest in the entire universe things to eat. Fried zucchini, fried tomatoes, fried eggplant, anything fried, I'm good with it.
There you go. Someone sent me a recipe for fried cabbage.
Oh, yum. See, that'd be good. Tell me what it is.
Okay, let me see. Let me scroll back up. I think it was in the chat room. There it is. Southern fried cabbage. Ralph sent it over to me. Pardon me. It says southern fried cabbage. Let's see. Three slices of bacon cut into thirds. A third cup of vegetable oil. 1 teaspoon of salt to taste. 1 teaspoon of ground black pepper to taste. 1 head of cabbage cored and sliced. 1 white onion chopped. 1 pinch of white sugar. It says place the bacon and vegetable oil into a large pot over medium heat. Season with salt.
Yum.
Yeah, so yeah, place the bacon and vegetable oil into a large pot over medium heat. Season with salt and pepper. Cook for about 5 minutes or until the bacon is crisp. Add cabbage, onion, and sugar to the pot. Cook and stir continuously for 5 minutes until tender.
Sounds yummy.
Calling that fried cabbage. It sounds to me like it's one of those, my mom would occasionally make I don't know what you call it. I couldn't remember. Like a hot salad where she would cook some bacon and then put all kinds of greens in there and cook it down, not to where it was a mush like spinach mush or collards. But they were still kind of had the consistency of soft leaves, soft lettuce, but it was warm and it had the bacon drippings on it and things like that. I think I vaguely remember her doing something like that. This sounds very familiar. So when you say cabbage, people think, you know, batter fried, but this is more of a kind of a pan fried or a stir fried, it sounds like. So pardon me. So green tomato apple pie. Love apple pie. I'm not sure. I know I've never implemented green tomatoes in any apple pie, that's for sure.
Yes. So what it does is it takes on the flavor and the texture. It takes on the flavors of the spices. Let's put it that way. The green tomato does. And then it, with the spices, the texture of it is of an apple as it bakes. So I can guarantee it. And that's the same thing with zucchini. Is the same thing, zucchini apple pie or apple pie or green tomato apple pie made with no apples at all, but just with the spices. And I can read you a recipe. It's 3/4 cup seedless raisins. 2 cups seeded and diced green tomatoes. So there would be either your zucchini or your apples in that.
And it's all diced. So it's not like sliced tomatoes. It's all diced and okay.
It's all chopped in chunks.
Good. Okay.
1 teaspoon lemon zest, 1/4 teaspoon lemon juice, 1 tablespoon of cider vinegar, 1/2 teaspoon of salt, 1 1/3 cups of sugar, 3 tablespoons of flour. Then you have your ground cinnamon, your ginger, and your pie crust. And that's it. And
so no apples. You don't mix it with the apples. The ingredient is the tomatoes or the zucchini itself.
Correct. And the spices is what turns it into. You can. There are recipes out there that I have I have seen that has a couple, you know, like maybe a cup to 2 cups or 2 apples peeled and sliced up or something like that. And so what happens is that's a way to stretch your apples. You would take your apples and cut them up and then put the rest in zucchini and tomatoes. And those are what takes on the flavor of those little bit of apples and all the spices. Now, if you do one with completely without apples, then basically your texture and your flavor is coming from your spices and the cooking of the zucchini or the green tomatoes. Yep. But I can guarantee you, if you have a really good crust and you have some really good spice blend, of course, I'd throw some butter in there. You know how when you make a apple pie, you always put a couple pats of butter underneath the top crust just so it melts all in and makes all that gooey, ooey goodness at the bottom? I would do that. And then I don't see how it could be bad. But anyway, that's good.
So now let me ask this. Does the tomatoes, because I think of, you know, cooking tomatoes would be, it would like become a mush more than actually an apple or a cherry keeps kind of its form. And when you cook that, all those diced tomatoes, does it not end up being more like a sauce? Can you slice it, or does it end up being more like a cobbler?
I make them in chunks, like big apple chunks. Because when I make my apple pie, I don't dice anything. That was just a recipe I read. But when I make my apple pie, you make big chunks of apples, correct? Or slice your apples. You don't dice them. So my green tomatoes, I chunk them, make big, like, slices of tomato rather than, not slices, but chunks, like you would do an apple. The same way. Then if you leave them that big, they're just going to cook down. They're not going to completely go to soft because we're not overcooking them. We're just cooking them to a certain time, you know, just like you would do an apple pie. And you know how those apples, they hold that. They still get mushy, but they still have some form to them. Same thing. If you were to cook your apple down like you do your tomato sauce, it would become saucy. But imagine that, saucy. And then, but if you leave your tomatoes in big chunks like you would do your apples, it will hold, they will hold some form, yes, and not be just mush. Yes.
Okay.
Does that make sense? Or did
I was thinking diced, like when you, like if you open up a can of diced tomatoes and you pour it out, it's like kind of tomato soupish. You know what I'm saying? So, okay, so you could chunk it up more like you would slice, the size of a sliced apple.
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
Agree. And then it would stay more, there'll be more texture to it. Exactly.
Uh-huh. Okay. Great.
Anyway, that is our tomato, green tomato or zucchini apple pie.
Now, I wonder getting me all excited here. Now, I guess you could do the same, like instead of zucchini, maybe you could, let me think how we could do this. Put the, I'm thinking, again, famous for cooking things in an iron skillet. So, like I do my iron skillet, what am I thinking about? Chicken pot pie or my iron skillet apple pie. I could put the bottom crust in, and then I could actually make basically the recipe for squash casserole, but actually make it into a pie, and then I could kind of mix all the ingredients, the spices, the condensed milk, I guess it is, the little bit of cinnamon and butter, whatever all goes into my recipe for the squash casserole, and I can put it down into that pie crust, put the top crust on, and then bake it, and kind of like what we're just talking about, the spices and things in there, it could be more, I mean, I could still probably call it a squash casserole pie.
Absolutely. There you go.
That sounds good to me. I may have to try that now that I'm thinking.
You're going to have to try that and let us know how that turns out, but I'm sure it's going to be wonderful.
Yeah, it may just be like a squash casserole, but look like a pie.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Once, of course, take it out of the oven, let it cool. It still probably won't slice into slices, but I can see like after you pull it out of the fridge the next day to warm up, it would actually congeal or whatever you want to call it, and then it would actually slice into slices and more like that. Versus, I'm gonna try it and I'll let everybody know what happens.
There you go. Let us know because I'm sure it'd be fun. I really need another sip of my wine. You know, this is just a really good one. I really like it. It does have a raspberry flavor, and that's perfect for one of our questions. Yay! Oh.
All right.
I actually put out there that, because I thought maybe we would go into a question-answer thing, I put out that I wanted some of my gardener friends to send some questions so that I could answer them online, which I thought that would be kind of fun to do. That might help some other people that might have had the same question. I don't know. But we'll see. We'll just do a few of them and see what happens. Okay, I have Jenny from La Crosse, and she wants to know, when do I plant garlic? Well, that's a really good one, because we had a garlic guru on last year, and it is almost time here in Wisconsin to plant garlic. Our garlic did amazing, and I'm really proud of it. So I'm going to answer her and say, Jenny, here in Wisconsin, we would probably wait till the ground cools down just a bit since we've been so warm. So I would give it another month or so and let the ground cool down before we put our garlic in. If we don't, then we're going to get our garlic to sprout, and that would be not the best thing in the world for it to do right now. We want it to stay in the ground and live, obviously, all winter, but then come back up in the spring for us. So we plant garlic in the fall. And so for you in La Crosse, which is just a little bit below us, you want to give it another month or so and let the ground cool down. Okay? So there we go. I don't know if she's listening, but I told her I would answer the questions and we'll go from there. Then I had Steve from Illinois. He sent me an email. How do I trim my hostas and when? That's a good question because we've had such a long, nasty, hot summer here in Wisconsin. But he is actually from Illinois, so that's southern of us, and I was just in Illinois, and it looks just as bad down there. I trim anytime. Well, you all know I trim when I want to trim. But, for instance, Steve, if you want to trim your hostas, this is a perfect time to trim if they really look bad and you're trying to clean up for fall. If you have time now, trim them back. Normally, I would say wait till later fall when they completely frost out on you and then trim them. But if you're ready to do it now. It doesn't hurt hostas. You can trim them in the spring, you can trim them in the summer, and you can trim them in the fall. They're pretty easy to take care of. But for now, if they really look bad, which a lot of our hostas do around here because of the heat and the dry and no rain, then trim them now. Go ahead and do it. But normally we'd wait another until fall. But go ahead and do it now. Just do it. Pick them up and give them a haircut. They'll love you for it. Now, Lisa from Ohio, how do I keep my chickens from eating my tomatoes? Yeah, right. Oh, goodness, Lisa from Ohio. I can tell you right now there's absolutely no way to do it unless you pen them babies up. But if you're like me, I don't like to do that because I have 16 acres and they run and roam and do whatever they want and lay me some wonderful, gorgeous eggs and keep all the ticks away. And on the grasshoppers, I have no issue with. A lot of the junk is gone. So what I suggest to you is to pen up your tomatoes rather than pen up your chickens. But yes, chickens love tomatoes, and what they'll do is they'll sneak around your garden and you'll think, oh, look, they're not bothering them because your tomatoes are green. And then all of a sudden they're starting to turn pink and you're looking at your beautiful pink tomatoes going, oh, look at those beautiful babies, they'll be ripe pretty soon. And then another week will go by and you'll go out there to harvest that tomato, and guess what? It either is gone or it has a humongous eaten hole out of the center of it. So, there you go. So, my tomatoes are free range. Yep. I would love to have free range tomatoes, but I can't because my chickens are free range. So, I, in order to get really good eggs and really good tomatoes, I have chosen to pen up my tomatoes. So, I have woven wire around my whole tomato patch that protects my tomatoes from those scavenging chickens. So I get the best of both worlds. I get really good eggs and chicken, and I get really nice tomatoes. So no free-range chickens here at Garden Wise. That's funnier than heck. I love it.
You know what we tried this year, Arlene, just to share, since it's all about gardening.
Yes.
We actually, about half of the row of tomatoes we planted, we just did nothing with. We planted them and said good luck, and didn't stake them, didn't pull them, nothing. And then, of course, we had the other half, we actually did the traditional tomato cages. I didn't have time this year to really build some stout ones that I really want to build out of basically fence wire about the size and make it round about the size of one of those barrels along the highway and then set it there. And so I love those. Just didn't have any time to make them this year. So just traditional simple steaks, and of course no surprise, but I wanted to try it because there's a huge local farm down here that just basically lets their tomatoes grow on the ground, and it was I'm sure time consuming and cost and things like that, and they plant so many, the ones they get are more than ample than what they need. But on my small scale, I don't think I'll ever do that again. It was the waste was very disheartening, and when I thought, wow, just a simple stake or post would have made, you know, so much more and usable produce. So a little bit more work, yes, but again, like with work, the reward is great. So we weren't happy with the ones we just let grow on the ground wild, at least here. And of course, again, whether the hot weather and lack of rain, even though we have irrigation, had anything to do with it, just wasn't pleased. Probably won't do that again.
Correct. I agree with you there. I had the same issue. You know, the ones that are caged are doing so much better than the ones that are lying on the ground. And we all have the same issue. It's time-consuming, and maybe we didn't get to it. You know, things go fast, and our life goes fast. We can't feel bad about it. We just go forward. And we learn from that maybe next year that might be my priority as well, is to try to get everything caged so that we don't have free range. Free-range tomatoes. I love that. Okay. Let's see. Garlic for sale. That would be Territorial Seeds that we had on last year. We had him on here last year talking about garlic. But Andy might have somebody else that also as well. But anyway.
No, tell me about the garlic. I want to do garlic this year. Someone told me, let me think, they posted it on Facebook. I made a post. I can probably go find it about what I was planting in the garden. And they said something about not planting garlic until the first week of November, maybe, or around Halloween.
It is only early because the ground temperature should be cooler. It's kind of like any fall bulb that's for your spring. Our temperature, our ground temperature is higher than it should be right now because we've had 89-90 degree weather instead of 70. So the ground temperature starts to drop. That's why probably, especially in your area, that I would think November would be a good time to plant for you. And Christmas at Halloween or Thanksgiving, because your ground temperature finally maybe does get to what, 60 or 70? I don't know.
Yeah.
So why.
Okay. So probably living here all my life, I feel that normally around Halloween we kind of get our first nice cool snap. So maybe between November 1st and 15th would probably be the good time. Now, do you do seed or is it like a potato? Can I do like a seed potato with garlic? How do I plant garlic? Is it seed?
Yes, it's seed. Well, it sets, basically.
Okay,
We call it garlic seed potato. It's like we call seed potatoes, and they're actually a potato with eyes, correct? It's not really a tiny little seed like we would refer to a tomato seed. It's seed potatoes and garlic potatoes and onion sets.
Onions.
Those are actually a smaller form of the product.
Okay.
So what I do is I take a head of garlic, I break it into all the cloves softly, take it apart, and I plant the largest of the cloves out of my garlic. Now, if you're buying seed garlic, most of those cloves, I would plant all of them because each clove of that head of garlic gives you another head of garlic when you harvest it mid-spring. You harvest garlic, we plant it in the fall,
okay.
It lives in the ground, comes up in the spring, then it lives all spring into mid-spring until it starts to give your scapes. We talked about scapes last year where
Top
have a little curlicue. Then that's when you start watching it, and that's when you harvest. So it's late spring to midsummer.
So I plant this in November, and I'm not harvesting until summer?
Yeah, mid-spring, somewhere in there, depending on how big you want them to be. We just pulled ours out maybe a month ago, and I planted mine in the fall. Some people plant them in the spring and still pull them up in the summer, and they still will get a head. You will get a head of garlic, just not as big. Why in the world? I really haven't made that much of an investigation on it as to why is it necessarily that we have to put them in the fall. So that's going to be another good test. What I'll do is I'll plant two rows of garlic this fall and wait and plant one early spring and see what happens. But the thing is, I know we need to take a commercial break here, so we'll talk about that when we come back. Why? I know why. We'll talk about that, why we need to plant it in the fall.
Yeah,
okay?
That sounds good. And I'm very discouraged now because I got to plant something in November and I don't get to reap the benefits till summer. And then I'm almost going through two complete garden turnovers before I can plant or harvest this one crop. So I don't know. Maybe I won't do garlic this year. You may have talked me out of it. Because of that. So all righty, we'll go to commercial break, folks. We're talking with Arlena Schott. Today is Garden Wise Living, where she comes on the first and third Wednesday of every month and talks us and teaches us all about year-round gardening. We'll be back right after this short break. When you need an incubator, think Brensea, the incubation specialist. Brensea has been a world-leading manufacturer of incubators for over 30 years. Incubators from 7 to 380 eggs with high-quality electronic and digital controls, including precise humidity control and programmable egg turning, all at surprisingly affordable prices. Visit them online at Brensea.com. Brensea spelled B-R-I-N-S-E-A. That's Brensea.com or call 1-888-667-7009. Enter the coupon code WHISPER at checkout and save 10% on their incubators, brooders, egg handlers, and other incubation accessories. When you need an incubator, think Brensea, technology you can trust.
You have the chickens, the coop, and the run. But do you have the egg cartons? Don't put your beautiful farm fresh eggs in any old used grocery store egg carton. Impress your friends with your very own custom labeled egg cartons from eggcartons.com. They have a large selection of custom egg cartons, stamps, and labels to choose from. Pick out your new custom egg cartons at eggcartons.com. That's eggcartons.com. Pictures of chickens on aprons are common across America, but picture a chicken wearing an apron and you'll probably get a good chuckle. Laugh if you must, but nothing protects hens better than the Hen Saver Hen Apron. Hen Saver Hen Aprons protect your hens from the damage caused by an overly affectionate rooster and may even provide protection from an unexpected hawk attack. Hen Savers come in several different sizes to fit both bantam and standard-sized hens and roosters. Colors include camo, denim, navy, brown, khaki or black, and soon pink. Crazy K Farm is expanding its already colorful Hen Saver collection to include the color pink. A portion of their sales will be donated to organizations that fund breast cancer research and awareness. Order your Hen Saver aprons today at hensaver.com. That's hensaver.com. It's easy and rewarding to keep backyard chickens, and My Pet Chicken can supply everything you need to get started, including baby chicks, chicken coops, accessories, books, and free how-to information, plus fun gifts and rooster decor. At My Pet Chicken, you can buy as few as 3 baby chicks. They also sell fertile hatching eggs. Visit them online at mypetchicken.com. That's mypetchicken.com.
Alrighty, I would also like to welcome a new sponsor to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer, Treats for Chickens, Health and Happiness for Your Modern Backyard Pet Chicken. Healthy Pet Chicken Basics, Non-Toxic Bug Relief, Treats, Organic Snacks, and more, all created with your backyard pet chickens in mind. At Treats for Chickens, we treat your chickens well. Find us online at treatsforchickens.com. That's treatsforchickens.com. Or ask for us in your local farm and feed store. Or your favorite pet shop. That's treatsforchickens.com.
And the mighty bird against prejudice continues his fight for law and order. So when you hear that cry in the sky, you'll know it's Super Chicken.
Alrighty, thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. Of course, first Wednesday of the month, it's Garden Wise Living with Arlena. So proud to have her on with us twice a month talking about year-round gardening. It's a big part of my life here and my family's life, and so glad to – very interesting show. I'm all about it. I've already got several ideas I'm going to do here at the homestead, but – I'm really bummed out now about this garlic thing because, you know, if I plant it in November, the next thing you know, I'm putting in more. I got to be careful about this area. This is where the garlic is. And when I go and plant my early spring garden in February, and then when I go and plant again in April until up, and be careful for that. So, you know, I'm going through two turnovers of garden seasonings, almost three seasons. And then I still have this little area of garlic that's really not doing anything until midsummer. So I'm kind of bummed about that, Arlena.
Really? How difficult is it? Really? Okay, now we're going to go back to this, why we need to plant in the fall. Actually, we went camping this weekend, and my daughter Ashley and I, who has a CSA, we'll have her on shortly, I'm sure, to talk about what CSAs are all about and how important they are. But anyway, they plant a lot of garlic. I mean, we're talking, I plant to a row and a half to two rows, they plant an acre. So she knows a little bit about garlic, and they were talking and discussing garlic and why it needs to be planted in the fall. And what we could best come up with, I think, and I just remembered this around the campfire, is if we try to determine what time in the spring to put it in, it may be too late. You know how we sit in the house going, oh, gosh, it's too cold outside because it's 62, or in the spring, you know, because we've, you know what I mean. But
yeah.
Or it's not time to plant because the ground is not, you know, it's going to freeze tonight, or if it's going to frost, or if it's going to, you know, right? So we may not get that jump on the spring on the time for the garlic to produce a really nice head for us, whereas if we were to put it in the fall, it's already in the ground, and then when the ground warms up, we don't really know, do we know, as humanoids sitting up here in our fancy little house, or our little houses, do we know exactly when that ground's warming up? No, but that garlic will know because the ground around her is free warming up, and out she pops in the spring. She's one of the first signs, besides our tulips and our daffodils, we look for the garlic to pop up out of the soil. So that tells us spring is on its way because the ground is actually warming up and the sap starts to run. So along with your maple syrup, you're looking at your garlic growing in your garden. So she is really a nice, hello, I'm awake kind of thing. So there, you can look at her that way. She's going to be your alarm clock for spring. So I want you to do this, Chicken Whisperer. I want you to go ahead, Andy, and put the garlic in. Put in a small row. I use flag markers. I keep them from all my garden projects that when I call Dig, 1-800-CALL-DIG, they put these beautiful little flags. They're red and orange and white
oh, yeah.
and stuff.
Yeah.
I save them all. And I use those as my markers in my garden because they were already there. What else are you going to do with them? Plus, they're nice little flags that say, hey. And you can take a Sharpie and you can write garlic on it.
I got plenty of those.
There you go.
A neighbor gave them to me.
And just give it a small row and say, that's where my garlic's at, okay? So then what we did is when it was time to harvest the garden, now it came, then I just put in another row of lettuce on top of it this summer or a late sprouting, whatever. You can put some fall something on top of it. No big deal. Just give it a spot because it's important. Garlic is yummy and it's good for us. So that is why I think I'm going to reiterate back and say, instead of saying I don't know, which I really don't, but I'm going to say this is why I think we need to plant it in the fall, is because it needs to be in the ground dormant and start to root when the ground's temperature starts to warm so that the roots are all nice and strong before outside temperature is ready for gardening. Then all of a sudden, poof, up she comes, and it has plenty of time to produce a really nice garlic head for us. Because if we do it trying to guess Mother Nature, we usually get it wrong because she's right all the time. So I'm going to say that's why, because it needs to be in the ground.
That makes sense.
Makes sense to me. It really does. It makes sense. It's kind of like your tulips and daffodils. Okay, then why can't we just plant tulips in the spring and then and daffodils in the spring? Because they tend to not bloom for us if we wait, and they're only offered, first of all, they're offered in the fall. But secondly, is if we put them in the ground in the spring, you know, we forgot about planting them. If you're like me sometimes, how many of us out there, raise your hands, I know you're out there, buy tulips in the fall, right, or get some tulip bulbs into daffodils, and they sit there, and you're waiting for fall to come, and you forget about them, or you got busy, it's kind of like staking our tomatoes, life ran away with us. Like the moon ran away with a spoon or whatever, the cow, I can't remember. Anyway, then all of a sudden, oh, we discover them. Oh, no, they're still in the crisper, or they're still in the bag in the garage, or, well, and then we plant them in the spring anyway because that will save them, but we don't get that really nice blossom from them until the following year. So that, I think, is the same reason that we do that, okay? So there we go. I'm going to say it that way. Let's see. When do you harvest lavender? Oh, I love lavender. Okay, so now we know about garlic. And you're going to do garlic anyway, right? We've brought you back to the fold. You're going to do garlic.
Okay.
Oh, I know you are. Okay. Now, let's see. What else do we have here? My potatoes. We did the garlic one. The chicken one was funny because we have free-range tomatoes now. I like that, free-range tomatoes. We have David from Winona, Minnesota. I have cucumbers coming out my ears. What else can I do with them besides pickling them? Well, David from Winona, do Dehydrate them. Here we go back to our little dehydrator. And the gal in the chat room that has three, awesome. I love dehydrated cucumbers. Yes, everybody says, dehydrated cucumbers, aren't they a lot of water? Yes, and they do take a long time. But once you dehydrate a cucumber, you'll never go back. You'll be hooked. Dehydrated cucumbers is like taking a bushel of cucumbers and smooshing all that flavor into this tiny little chip. It's amazing, and they are amazing on green salads. What can I do with a dehydrated cucumber? We cannot rehydrate them. They will be nasty and ishy-mushy if we do. But we can crumble them on a green salad. We can use them on my vegetable dip, anything like that. You could use them if you were doing a vegetable wrap with a leaf lettuce and all the goodies inside and crumble them inside. Give the wonderful, sweet, crunchy texture taste. They're just amazing. So that is my answer to you. I mean, cucumber soup, really? Oh, see, well then, if you like cucumber soup, you could use these for cucumber soup because they would rehydrate for cucumber soup. They wouldn't rehydrate for a fresh cucumber on a salad or a sandwich, but they would do for that. So there we go. That's what David from Minnesota, Winona, Minnesota, can do with all his cucumbers. Okay, Sharon from Michigan. Oh, we talked about this a little bit, but it touched on it, so if she's listening in, then we can tell her. Sharon from Michigan wrote, when do I plant tulips? Same thing as garlic, in the fall. But make sure, this is coming from zone 4-5, and that's me here in Wisconsin. Your ground temperature for your tulips and daffodils and things like, and those spring flowering bulbs has to be below 60 degrees. Has to. Otherwise, what happens if that tulip or that daffodil bulb or crocus will start to grow. And then we get a freeze on top of that, here in Wisconsin now, or snow, and then it hinders that beautiful blossom for spring. So here in zone 4-5, I tell people to not plant their bulbs. You have to purchase them, because I can guarantee you your garden centers will not be either A, open here in Wisconsin or Minnesota in the end of October, November when we want to plant them, or they will be completely out of your variety. So if you order them in, mail order, or if you go to your local gardens, independent garden centers, and you purchase them, put them in a bag, a paper bag, either A, put them in a cool, dry place like your garage, depending on how cold or hot it is in your area, or in the crisper of an older refrigerator, like in the garage refrigerator, not in with your vegetables. There's a thing that goes on with bulbs and vegetables that reacts to each other, and those bulbs will sprout two ahead of time, and they don't do well. So what you need to do then is plant them in the fall. Plant your daffodils, your tulips, irises can be planted anytime, you know that. They're all tough, but a lot of people plant them in the fall. Your lilies, your fancy lilies, like your tiger lilies, your any of your African lilies, any of those fancy Asiatic lilies, those all should be planted in the fall here in zone 4-5. And anything like that, your crocus you'll find offered, daffodils, narcissus, anything like that. Those things will be offered in the fall or in the late season. Like right now I see the garden centers advertising that their bulbs are in. That's wonderful because they want you to purchase the bulbs, but please do not plant them here in zone 4-5 until the ground temperature at least goes down to 65 degrees, 64, 65 degrees, or those bulbs will sprout and you will not get as nice a blossom that you want in the spring. So there you go, Sean from Michigan. That is what I would say to do. Well, that was all. Those are the questions that I brought forward for us to do. So, any other questions for me?
So, my garlic, does it need to be in a what kind of soil is it like? Because I've got to admit, half of my garden is like standing on the beach, good deep sandy, and then I got part of it's. Some of it's hard red clay, and my turnips last year did fabulous up in that harder soil, and they were just had a beautiful, beautiful thicket, if you will, of turnips. What kind of soil? Because I'm trying to pan out where I'm going to plant this stuff now, and what kind of soil do they like?
Garlic prefers a sandier soil. They are kind of like your
your, in my area, your, more like your radishes and things like that, or carrots, they prefer a sandier soil, not a more compact soil or clay soil. So if you have a choice of what to do, I would, Andy, I would put them in a sandier spot in your garden.
Okay.
If you have a choice.
Yeah, I've got a choice. Now, there's a question now. Is there such a thing, I'm not sure I understand this, as too much soil in the garden?
Okay. Well, now, depending on what we're talking about, if we're referring to building your beds, for instance, a raised garden bed, what she's probably, if we're referring to a raised garden bed, then, yes, there could be too much soil that actually came out of your normal garden. Does that make sense? And it could be too heavy. Because in a raised garden bed, we need to amend that soil. We need to add a certain percentage of regular soil to a certain percentage of compost, an organic matter, to a certain percentage of sand. If that is what she's referring to, then yes, we could have too much soil to where it's too heavy. And in that case, we would add more organic matter or add more sand. Does that make sense? So I wasn't sure of where too deep a soil. Too deep.
My husband puts a lot of soil in the garden, so I sink. Yeah, every time I walk into it. Is this just like just dirt that ends up getting muddy, or is it like topsoil, or is it compost? New Dawn Farm Girl, maybe you can elaborate a little bit more.
Yeah, just what do you mean by he puts too much soil? Yes, dirt and manure. Dirt. Yes. If he's adding dirt, soil is, if he's adding soil from an existing, for instance, farm bed or a pasture or garden bed that has not, your vegetable garden that has not been amended, yes, there can be too much if you're saying soil or dirt. Because it needs to be lightened up, maybe, depending on what your soil is. My soil out here is all nice, black, nice, heavy black soil. And I just add a little bit of organic matter, manure or pullings out of my chicken house or whatever. I don't have to amend too much. Sometimes your soil may be heavy, heavy, heavy clay, and that, in fact, if that's the case, yes, there could be too much of that soil. You need to add more sand, add more organic matter to lighten it up. But if he is, that means a very friable, more sand, that we have too much black dirt in it, should not be sinking in it as I walk into it. Would that be the soil because it's staying too wet? Or would that be, then, if sinking into it, then it's too wet? I don't know how you would sink it. I'm sorry, dear. I don't mean to. I'm just trying to get a handle on it. I walk into it. You know, there is too much organic matter. I think she means there's too much organic matter. That could be. This happens dry or wet. That could be, too. Then that means there's too much manure. Oh, sure. Or not enough sand, so the drainage is not good. So you're not, maybe it's not really the soil he's adding too much of. Maybe it is organic matter. How does your garden grow? Let's put it that way. Or do you need to make walking paths, maybe? Not compacted. No, it shouldn't be compacted, but it shouldn't stay wet. It should have the tendency to have a good drainage, and your idea did not grow well. It didn't grow well. That could be, he might have too much organic matter in it if he's using manure, which means that it's staying mushy. That's a technical term, too, mushy. Staying mushy and doesn't drain well. I would work it all in, either A, rototiller. Oops, Pat's not here, so we can say that word. Or if it's a tall area garden, we can use our shovel or spade or something and work it up and get that dirt. You know, I don't care if you call it dirt, you can. You know, some people have this issue with soil, dirt. Let's just call a spade and get down to it. Don't worry about that, rock science. Right?
You got the dirt and mud and soil and loam and,
And New Dawn Farm Girl, don't say sorry about anything. About there's no stupid questions in gardening. It's all about getting it all handled. It's not about what's wrong or right. It's let's handle it. I would say that more than likely, that soil needs to be turned. I'm just guessing because I haven't seen it. Where do you live? I'll come there. Turn it. Stop adding organic matter right now just to get that soil. How deep down before you actually hit dirt? You know, really. Is the top organic matter and then it's mushy all the time? Or is there dirt under there somewhere? Or is it mixed and we just are needing some more sand in it so that it needs, so it can drain out? Or there's a lot of questions. Dirt or soil, all the same. Loam is not sand, it's not clay, though. Huh. Earth soil. There is the first year I did not grow up about half a foot. It's about half a foot down before you hit soil. Then I'd say it needs to be turned. I need to work it up. Work it so that those, all your good organisms and rhizomes and all them good little guys can get working on that and get that worked into making some really good soil for you. I'm sure he's not doing wrong. I'm just saying if you're worried about walking on it and it's always moisturous, I'd say it's not draining well and it's not working. It should work as far as, you know, those little guys with their little, those little tiny rhizome dudes, I look at them as little tiny guys with little hard hats and shovels, and they're in there and they're chopping it up and they have little rototillers and they're, or shovels, whatever Pat wants. And they're in there, and they're just chewing things up and spitting it out, and it's just getting all nice and good. That's how I look at those little guys working for us. And I'd say they're not working. They're taking a nap. So I would possibly work that soil up and get some of that dirt that's a foot and a half down up. Dig a trench, fill with black stuff. There's a method with altering rows. Dig a trench between those trenches and put the black stuff in it. Okay, I will work it, baby. There you go. New time, work it.
Yeah.
There you go. She's going to work it up and let us know how it works. But I'd say that's the problem. And then maybe put some walking rule, you know, throw down some recycled carpet pieces, strips, if you want something to walk on, or boards or something for now until you get those little guys working. Get them working. anyway, there we go. We'll try to help that. And help her with that. But anyway, what else are we going to talk about today?
I'm putting in the chat room right now questions for Arlena, and we'll see
questions.
If...
I like questions. I love questions. I loved putting it out there, and then I had these emailed to me. That was really nice. I really like that. That question-answer thing, I like that. And I really like talking about how you were talking about at the beginning of the show about fall gardening. And yes, we are thinking about fall garden crops here as well. So, yeah, our garden, though, is just kicking it right now. It's still bright green, other than my cucumbers. You know how they always get that gray, ugly look to them, you know? It's like, come on. But for some reason, and then they start doing that, you know, that rejuvenation thing when it starts to cool down and you've got all those ugly vines down below and all of a sudden here's all these beautiful vines on top. I don't know why. But could cucumbers in this area do that every single time? It's like they peter out for the summer. Don't go there. They're tired for the summer, and then they jump right back into us when it's when it's cooling down. And I love that. But anyway, everything else looks beautiful. Other than my squash. Did anybody else have issues with squash this year? Summer squash?
No, my squash did absolutely fabulous for the first time in a long time. Normally I get I either get the root rot or that stem rot, or someone told me there's a little worm that gets into that root, and it basically just makes it mush, and then the plant dies normally after I get one or two squash off it. But this year, didn't have it. I had squash from beginning to end. It was awesome.
Good, because my zucchini usually does my summer squashes, my patty pans, my yellow crookneck, my yellow zucchini, my straight net, they always do just beautiful. But this year, I moved them from last year, because I always try to move things around, but I should have maybe not. I don't know why, but they just had got that that gray, blighty look to them and just are looking really shabby. So if you look at my garden, it's, you know, tomatoes are bright green, then it goes to the peppers that are bright green, then it goes that squash, yellow and gray, and then it starts out again beautiful tomatillos and beautiful eggplants and beautiful. This is the first year I've ever grown eggplant. That is the weirdest thing. I'm almost 50, which my birthday is the 19th, oh, by the way. Mm-hmm. You can all send me birthday line. Anyway. But
send your birthday gift to Arlena Schott, P.O. Box.
And I'll be 50. And this is the first year I've ever had eggplant. They usually get eaten up because I don't use pesticides or chemicals, and they usually just get all eaten up before they produce. So. And I love eggplant. I love it, love it, love it. So it's been a really good year for eggplant, which is crazy. And a strange year for my zucchini, my summer squash. My winter squash is doing amazing. My beans, green beans, oh, my gosh. Green beans, yellow beans, purple beans, they're amazing. Bright green, 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 and just prolific. Swiss chard, everything's still kicking it. So we're not really thinking too much about taking out the garden yet. But I did see there was... a question in there. When do I pull up my summer garden, and what do I do with the vines and things?
Now, I'll tell you what I did, and I did it last week, is we got the old bush hog, and we mowed over everything, the corn stalks, the bean stalks, the tomato, everything in our garden we had growing right over with the bush hog twice to make sure everything got into nice, pretty small pieces. And then I let it sit out in the sun to make sure it all kind of got brown and crispy. And then, of course, I hit it with the harrow, and I'm working it back into the soil to help aerate and compost breakdown. And I'm going to be planting right through that stuff. This is from my fall garden, right through. So that was my answer of what I did with mine. I'll have you answer what you recommend now, or what you've done, or other ideas.
Correct. If you had no blights, no pests, in that certain thing, for instance, your tomatoes. If you had blight in your tomatoes, then you yank them out and you take them over to Andy's house and put them. No, you don't. You get rid of them. You do not compost them back in, or you do not till them back in. You don't work them back in with your shovel, whichever way. You do not pile them on your compost pile so that they compost in, and next year you've spread your compost and you've spread your blight or your pest bugs. If you have an issue with bugs, the same thing. So it depends on your situation. If you're like me and I have absolutely no issue with anything, then I would do like Andy, other than my zucchini. Now, I will pluck those suckers and I will take them to the back of the ranch and I will put them in a garden compost pile way back there and never use them. They can go into the soil. But everything else, till it in. Absolutely. Cut it down, chop it up, whatever you need to do. If it's monster big stalks like my sunflowers, obviously, those have to go because I don't have a brush hog, and so I have to do it myself. I would do it the same way you did. I would chop them up and put them back in for those little guys with the little hard hats and the little shovels and little tillers and the little munchers. I would give them to them and say, get to work. That's what I would do. Yep, absolutely right with that. But if you had issues, if you had blight, if you had pests, I would yank them up, put them in a wheelbarrow, and walk them to the farthest point of Neverland that I could get them and not use them for building my soil with. Okay? There
Sweet.
You go. Mm-hmm. Is a good compost pile hot enough to kill blight? I believe not. I believe not. That is my opinion on it. There may be some other opinions, but in my opinion, I wouldn't test it. Why? What's the point? I wouldn't trust it. I would get rid of them, bag them up, put them on the curb if you have to, take them to, I wouldn't even take them to the local compost pile because you know what they do? They blend all that up and give it away in the spring, and then you're spreading it again. I don't know. I really, blight, I believe, is brought in by the grasshoppers in the spring, so, you know, hoppity hop, but I wouldn't trust it. I wouldn't plant in the same spot that my tomatoes had blight in or anything had blight in. I would, as far as the same, like if my tomatoes had blight, I wouldn't plant tomatoes in that same spot. I wouldn't till them in. I would yank them up and put them in a bag or in a wheelbarrow and walk them to the end of the earth. And that's what I would do with them.
Perfect.
Okay, so now we know. We've solved all the world's problems. I need a glass of wine.
Yes, you do.
Crop rotation. Yes, absolutely. Love crop rotation. Love it, love it, love it. Our alfalfa fields are coming out this year and going into corn, which I'm sad to see, but it's time. Really had a bad this year. Just really bigger. I'm talking bigger crops now, of course, you know, alfalfa, but that kind of goes with gardening all around, you know, depending on what's going on with your area. But this last year's lack of snow cover hindered the alfalfa fields badly, and then lack of rain did the same thing, so that was pretty sparse. We got a quarter of the hay we normally get from our fields and our pastures, so out they come, and they'll go into corn. So crop rotation this year. Yeah, we're going to practice that. Awesome. So you're going to do garlic, Andy, and I want to hear all about it in spring.
Okay.
Okay. Rice Krispies treat. I love Rice Krispie treats, and nobody makes me any. Poor me.
But your birthday's coming up, so you never
know. Yeah, my birthday's coming up, so we have Rice Krispie treats. I'm going to pour some more wine.
Wine and Rice Krispie treats.
Gotta have it. Anyway, what else are we going to talk about today? I took pictures of my eggs. Who else out there takes pictures of their eggs? I'm the most retarded thing in the entire universe, I think. Sometimes when I take pictures of my eggs, your pancreas will take care of a couple of minutes. Oh, my gosh, yeah. I like blush wines a lot, too. Yeah, I do, too. So, for fall, peas. Is it get cool enough for you guys to put in a late fall peas, pea crop?
Actually, I'm going to put in English peas.
English peas?
Yes.
Nice.
Yep.
That's nice. And spinach, we can do a spinach because it'll go until even the snow will cover on top, you know, the cover. Even if I put in, like, my Swiss chard right now will continue to grow if I keep it cut. Go, go, go. And she's still going out there. If even at in November, if we go out and we, the end of November, first week in December or whatever, and press the snow off, she's still living under there. It's the craziest thing. Crazy, crazy, crazy. Yep. So I'm hoping even in and my daughter's high tunnels that she'll be able to do Swiss chard and things like that. I'm sure she will, because if it stays good under the snow, but that's protection. Snow is quite a insulator for us. Lots of egg. I love post my egg peas. I don't have any Araucanas, though. I don't, and that is irritating to me because I have these beautiful browns, like three different colors of browns,
mm-hmm.
and I have a white. That's the first. And you know what is another first for me, almost 50? And thank you for sending me that ARP link. I use it very much. Thank you very much, by the way. And how old are you, sir?
43.
Okay. What?
43.
43. So you're behind me. Yeah, that's why I'm smarter. Anyway. Anyway. So, this is the first year I've ever had a white egg. My pullets, three little white chickens. My daughter, she's a professional photographer, and at Easter, she had three little white yellow chicks. You know, because they got to be cute and fluffy, right? From the farm store, supply store. And she brought them home, and they took all the pictures with all the kids, and then she gave them to me because they have a chicken coop, huge chicken coop, so they can't have domestic chickens on the farm. So she brought me those little chickens, and I raised them, and I believe they're leghorns. They're a thin-bodied, beautiful white little chicken, and I just love them. They're just so sleek and beautiful. To me, they're gorgeous. And I have never had white chickens. Why? Because I always wanted brown eggs. Epiphany, brown eggs, fresh eggs is brown, right? So I have these beautiful, beautiful, beautiful little white pullet eggs, and I'm so proud of them because I've never in my life had, and I've had chickens all my life, have had white eggs. So I'm so excited. So now I take pictures of my browns, my three colors of browns and my whites in there, and the only thing is I don't have any Araucanas, any blues or greens, and that is my goal for my 50th is to have Araucana chickens. Isn't that cool?
And Rice Krispie treats.
And Rice Krispie treats with wine. With wine.
Very
gotta
good.
Have it.
Awesome.
Yes.
God, love it. Well, thank you so much for coming on today. Great information. I've got a couple of things that I'm going to try, specifically based on your kind of green tomato apple pie as a kind of a squash casserole pie, kind of the same concept. So definitely going to try that, and I'll see what kind of garlic I can find at the farm store when I go there today. And okay, I'll try to find a place. God, that seems a lot of garlic. That's like 9 months. November, December, January, March, April, May, June, July. Yeah, 9 months I have to wait to put just a few garlic in my spaghetti, which I can get down here at the store.
It's very, very, it's worth the wait. Let's put it that way. It's so much more flavorful. And then you save a couple of those heads for seed for the next year, and you never have to buy it. Here, you save the biggest. Okay.
That'll do. Thank you so much for joining. See you in a couple of weeks.
Okay. Bye-bye, all.
Bye-bye. Thanks for joining us. All right. That's Arlena Schott, Garden Wise Living, here on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. Look her up on Facebook and on Twitter and her website, the whole nine yards, Garden Wise Living on Facebook. And I think it's Green Blessings on Twitter, if my memory serves. So, but you can find her and become a friend and all that other good internet stuff. So, thank you very, very much for tuning in today. Don't forget, tomorrow we're going to welcome poultry scientist Dr. Bridget McRae, PhD. And we got a great topic in store for tomorrow. And then this Friday, don't forget, we're giving away an awesome chicken coop from mypetchicken.com right here on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. And we'll see you tomorrow, 12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on Blog Talk Radio. Have a great day, everybody. Oh.